And then what?
Pox could not imagine that scene at all. And then he told me I didn't know what I was talking about, and until I did, I should kindly keep to my own business. And I told him my friends were my business. And he said I should choose my friends with care, and I said I'd learned more from you since you'd come than from him since I'd been here.
Con stopped, blushing scarlet.
And then,
Rufin put in with a wide grin,
then Sieri said maybe he should have long yellow hair to catch Con's attention, and Con swung on him and ended up flat on his back. Sieri asked the others what they thought, and apparently everyone was on your side. I wish I'd been there. I knew I'd regret being in that lower class after you got here. I don't know if I could have done any more, but...
But you shouldn't have, said Pox, looking at Con. He's the weapons master. You shouldn't argue with him.
But he was wrong, said Con stubbornly, his eyes glinting.
Pox, if you've got a fault, it's that you're too willing to be ruled. I know what you'll say. You'll say that's how a good soldier is. Maybe so, for a mercenary company. But we're Gerdsmen. Gerd himself said that every yeoman must think for himself. I don't care if Sieri is the weapons master, or the training master, or the marshal general. If he's wrong, he's wrong. And if I think he's wrong, I should say so.
Just because you think he is wrong doesn't make him wrong, argued Pox. How do you know you're right?
I can tell unfairness when I see it, growled Con.
How do you know?
Pox persisted. Sometimes things seem unfair when they happen, but later you can tell they weren't. So how do you know when something is truly unfair?
Well, when it's...
I mean, by Gerd, Pox, it's easier to know than to say. I know Sieri was unfair to you. He kept picking at you, trying to make you mad. And then when you got mad, he blamed you for it. And you were hurt, dripping blood all over. And he didn't even offer to heal it for you.
Pox shrugged. If he thought I was wrong, he wouldn't.
But it was his fault. And so it wasn't fair. Don't you know anything? Didn't you ever have brothers or someone in your company that kept trying to put things on you? Surely you know what I mean.
Pox shrugged again. Con, I know enough to know that looking for the final fault, who's really to blame, just keeps trouble alive longer. I shouldn't have lost my temper, no matter what. If he was wrong to push me that far, it was still my fault. And the Marshal General told me when I came that they were reluctant to train someone who had given no vows of service.
But now you're joining the Fellowship, is that right?
Asked Rufin.
Yes. The surgeon says I should be up to about at Midwinter Feast.
How bad is your leg?
Not bad. They stitched it up. It's healing clean. It's mostly blood loss. I should have tied it up tighter to begin with. Then she thought of something else.
Con, did some dwarves show up at the field after I left?
Con looked startled.
How did you know about them?
Then he grinned broadly.
That was something, let me tell you. Two of them came marching up, right into the class, in the middle of the row we were. Anyway, came into the class and interrupted us. I can't talk like they do. All that, it is that, and is it that it is. But the long and short of it was that Sieri had asked them to come and demonstrate axe fighting, and they were ready. Sieri told them he'd dismissed his student, and they grumped about being called out for nothing. So he said they could show the rest of us, and they glared around and said they wouldn't show anyone who didn't have the guts to learn. One of them challenged Sieri himself. Well, we saw some axe fighting, let me tell you, and that axe you were using won't ever be the same.
Pox felt a guilty twinge of satisfaction. She tried to conceal it. Con needed no encouragement.
Is Master Sieri all right?
Oh, yes. He got a scratch or two, but you know he can heal that. It's nothing to him. Anyway, now that you're joining the Fellowship, you'll be coming back to class, won't you?
I suppose. I haven't seen Master Sieri.
Pox wondered if he would hold a grudge against her. You are staying, aren't you?
Yes.
Then you'll be back with us. That'll be good. And listen, Pox, you keep in mind what I said. As a yeoman, you have a right to think for yourself. You're supposed to.
I do, said Pox.
You do, and then you don't. I know what you're thinking, about me and the juniors, and you were right there. You stand against us, the others in the class, when you think differently. But you don't stand against anyone over you. I'll bet you never argued with your sergeant or captain or the duke.
Pox found herself smiling. She could not imagine Con arguing with Stammel more than once,
let alone with Arkelin. But she defended herself.
I did argue with the duke once. Well, not exactly argue.
Once, Khan snorted. And he was wrong only once in 3 years? That's a record.
She shook her head at him. It was useless to try to explain. She tried anyway.
Khan, privates don't argue with commanders. Not unless it's very important, and usually not then. And we don't see everything. We can't know when the commander is wrong.
So what did you argue, not exactly about?
Pox froze. She had never meant to get close to that knight in Arrhenius again.
You don't need to know, she said lamely.
Come on, Pox. I can't imagine you arguing with anyone like that. It must have been something special. What was it? Was he going to start worshipping Liart or something?
Pox closed her eyes a moment, seeing Siniava stretched on the ground, the Halverics at his side, the angry paladin confronting her duke. She heard again the taut silence that followed the duke's outburst and felt the weight of his eyes on her.
I can't tell you, she said hoarsely. Don't ask me, Khan. I can't tell you.
Pox? Said Rufin quietly. You don't look ready for supper in the hall. We'll bring something up for you.
His gentle understanding touched her. She opened her eyes to see them both looking worried.
I'm all right, she said firmly.
You're all right, but you're not well. If you're to make your vows at the midwinter feast, you don't need to be scurrying up and down stairs again today. It's no trouble.
He went on, waving her to silence.
If we go now, we can all eat up here in peace. Come on, Khan.
And the two of them went out, closing her door softly and leaving her to her thoughts.
Chapter 22 Marshal General Arianya headed the table. Three high marshals, two paladins, and five marshals, three attached to Granges and two from the college itself, completed the conference.
Will that new yeoman be ready to test for the midwinter feast, Arianya?
Said the oldest of the group, Marshal Juras of Moredge Grange.
I think so. She says she's well enough now, but the surgeons don't want her fighting for another few days.
That would look good,
muttered High Marshal Connet, Knight Marshal of the Order of Gerd. Nothing like a candidate fainting in the ceremony.
She won't faint, said the Marshal General firmly.
Someone chuckled softly, thinking of it, and she frowned around the table. It's not that often we bring new yeomen in here, she reminded them. It's serious to her.
I know that, said Marshal Corey, the archivist. It just slipped out, Marshal General.
Very well. And while we're on the subject, I would like to suggest something else.
What you and Ambirian were chatting about yesterday?
Asked Marshal Juras.
If it's what I think, I'm against it.
The Marshal General glared at him.
You might at least give me a chance to present the idea, Juras.
He waved his hand. She glanced around the table.
You know we're desperately short of paladins.
They nodded. I have word from Marshal Kalath, down in Horngard, that Fenneth was killed a few months ago. A stir ran around the table. Several of the marshals glanced at the two paladins, who stared ahead and met no eyes. Fenneth had been Ambirian's close friend, and Sayer was his great-niece.
We need to select a large class of candidates, if we can. The paladins in residence here agree that they can each take on two candidates.
Is that necessary?
Juras broke in, looking from face to face.
I think so. The Marshal General spread a short parchment in front of her and ran her hand down the page.
Juras, for the past 200 years or so, the Fellowship of Gerd has had from 20 to 30 paladins recorded at a time. Those on quest vary from 15 to 25 at any one time. We now have on quest only 5.
She waited for the murmurs to cease, nodded, and went on.
You see? And here in Finn Panir, we have only 7 who can take on candidates for training. As you know, any of these may be called away at any time. If we can find 14 candidates, 2 for each training paladin, it will still be well over a year before any of those are ready to go. And in the meantime, we have no one to train a backup class.
I think we should feather that, said Marshal Corey. If we chose 7 now, then they might progress faster, having more of the paladin's time. In a half year or so, choose more. Then we'd get a few out faster and have more coming along.
The Marshal General nodded.
That's a good idea.
Ambirian, what do you think?
I like that better than taking on two novices at once, said Amberian. But I don't know if that will shorten the time any. Remember that each candidate has had by tradition all the time a single paladin sponsor can give. We dare not test these candidates any less, because times are desperate. It is in desperate times that we need most to be sure of them.
What list do we have? Asked High Marshal Connett.
A short one. The Marshal General rubbed her nose. I sent word to all the Granges last spring, when Fenneth wrote that Arrhenius would be at war by summer. We talked of this last year, remember? But we've lost 8 paladins in the past year.
8?
She nodded gravely. Yes. We all know that great evil has been moving in Arrhenius and the Westmounts. Nearer home, we have seen outbreaks again in Eastern Saya. Some reports indicate serious trouble in Leonia. Marshal Sedfer, of Brewer's Bridge, reported that a priest of Akria had been laired between his grange and the Gnome Kingdom nearby. Apparently he had preyed on nearby farms and caravans using spellbound robbers.
They'd say they were spellbound, muttered Juris.
That may be, of course. I have only his report to go by, but Brewer's Bridge has been a healthy community for years, since Longstones at least. If Akria can have a priest there, where else may we not expect trouble?
What happened to the paladins, Amberian? Asked Marshal Corey.
We are still finishing the reports for the archives, Marshal, said Amberian slowly. Chenin Hoka. He was the Horn Guard originally. He hadn't been north of the mountains for years. Was killed by Liart's command in Sibili during the assault on that city.
I thought that's where Fenneth was.
He was there, yes. Chenin was taken some time earlier, while helping a grange near Pliuni defend itself. A witness thought he was dead, but Siniava's troops got him to Sibili to the temple, and he was killed, finally, after long torments. Amberian said nothing more, and silence filled the room. Then he sighed and began again. I knew him when I was a candidate. That was the last time he was north. He knocked me flat, I remember, and I lay there wondering why I'd ever wanted to be a paladin. Anyway, Dogala Varela was lost at sea. He was sailing east along the Immerhoft coast. He'd told a guardsman at Sul that he had a call to come north. The ship was seen going onto reefs near Whiteskull, and his body was recovered some days later. We have no reason to doubt the identification. Garen Garrison was killed in battle at Sibili. Fenneth saw that. The two of them were holding light against a darkness cast by Liart's ranking priest. A crossbow bolt got him in the eye. Arianya Perisdaughter held a Dask Drogdigs away from a caravan in one of the mountain passes in the Dwarf Watch, but it fell on her in the end. Teki Hakinir was apparently killed by a band of forest sprites, whatever they call them in Zordania. The only word we have is from a witness that says he was stuffed with pine needles like a pin pig, which I suppose is what they call a hedgehog.
No, Marshal Corey shook his head. No, a pin pig is bigger and lives in trees. They call it that because its flesh is sweet, like pork. It sounds like those Mickey Keki. They come in waves, hundreds at a time. But what was he doing up there?
Amberian shrugged. I didn't know he was there until we got the word he'd been killed. The witness said something about a Varkingla of the Long Houses of Stocky, whatever that means.
Corey nodded. It means Stocky's clan thought they had to move somewhere, the whole bunch. That's not common. Teki was Zordanian, wasn't he?
Yes.
I would guess that they asked his protection to move the clan through the forest, and the Mickey Keki didn't cooperate. They usually don't.
Have you ever seen one? Asked the Marshal General.
Oh, yes. When I was a rash boy, my 3 cousins and I sailed across the Honorgat to visit Zordania. That was the plan, at least. My uncle had told us we couldn't sail across the river like that. Of course, we thought he was just trying to spoil our fun.
Why can't you? Asked Sayer, speaking for the first time.
You're from the mountains, aren't you, Sayer? Yes, well, any time you sail across the river, you've got its current to consider, just like rowing. But at the mouth of the Honorgat, it's that and the tide and the sea current all together. The short of it is that we ended up a long way up the coast. We couldn't even see Priolith anymore. The way the current set, we couldn't sail back without going far out to sea.
We may have been rash, but we had more sense than that. To sail a skin boat out of all sight of land? We thought we'd walk back along the shore, carrying the boat, until we got to Hunnergat.
Carrying a boat?
Sayre was clearly skeptical. Skin boat. Not as heavy as you'd think. Hard work, though, with the sail and lines and all. Anyway, the forest in Zordania comes right down to the sea, and I mean all the way. You can walk with one foot in the waves and slam into limbs. With a boat, we had to weave in and out as we could. Not easy. Hallory, my oldest cousin, thought we should climb onto level ground, back in the forest, and go that way. Seemed a good idea to me. I'd nearly had my eye poked out by too many twigs already, trying to watch my footing. For a time, everything went well. Not too much undergrowth, just tall dark firs and spruce, spaced so we could make it between them with the boat. Then we heard the first voices.
The sprites?
Mickey Kecky. Nasty whispers that you couldn't quite identify. Squeaks. Little cries like someone sitting on a hot tack. I started to feel my neck sweat, and so did the others. Hallory tried to hurry us, and we fell right into one of their traps, a sort of cone-shaped pit, lined with pine needles and slippery as grease. We'd hardly caught our breath when they were all around it, chittering at us. They're much less than dwarf tall, with greenish fur all over, and very long arms with long-fingered hands. It was the boat that saved us. When they started with their darts, we got under it and shook.
What do they use? Bows?
No, a sort of tube. They blow into it, and the dart flies out. They throw them by hand, too. The darts are poisoned, usually. Innery, my middle cousin, was hit by one, and though he lived, he was sick for weeks. That night we thought he'd die. If it hadn't been for some clan's longhouse nearby, their sentries heard the Mickey Kecky laughing and taunting us. I wouldn't be here. They drove them off and pulled us out. It was 2 days before we got home. And my uncle, well, you can imagine. Corey shook his head.
Well, said Amberian, now we know about Mickey Kecky.
He went on with his list. Saren Innerith went into Kostendan, as you know, because we had word that Guardsmen were held in slavery there. Her head returned to Peary Grange. We have no idea what happened, where or how. Jory of Westbells finally died of the lung fever that's plagued him these 4 years. And Fenneth, as you heard, died in Horngard.
What of the current candidates? Don't we have any who will finish this year?
That was the High Marshal Suriest, Knight Marshal of the Order of the Cudgel. At best, we may have 5 this year, Amberian tells me. Costa has withdrawn his candidacy and transferred to the Marshal Hall. Dort withdrew. Pellis may withdraw. And of course we don't know what will happen in the trials. Because we had so few paladins here to train, we don't have any scheduled for the following year. We would have had Ellis, but she had to leave, as you remember. She may be back, but not soon enough.
Which leaves us with the new list. What have we got?
The Marshal General shifted the papers in front of her and glanced at another one. We've talked over most of these before. Are you still opposed to the Varakai Squire, Amberian? He nodded.
Marshal General, we cannot define the problem, but we would not be happy with him.
Nor I, said High Marshal Connet. Look at the time we put in on Pello Varakai, and what came of that.
Well then, as I see it, we've got 5 good candidates, 4 in the knights' classes, and Sedith, the marshal we spoke of last time.
And we need 7.
And we need as many as we can find, said the Marshal General. Now,
I know what you're leading up to, interrupted Juris. You want to include that new yeoman.
What? High Marshal Suriest turned his head. Connet snorted. The Marshal General held up her hand and they all quieted.
Juris, you could have let me say it, but yes, I do. Before you say anything, consider, she's a veteran of the Arrhenius Wars.
That's a recommendation?
But Corey subsided when the Marshal General looked at him.
We had a report from Fenneth about her. He thought she should be considered a possibility if she ever joined the Fellowship. Marshal or Paladin, he said. Said for reports that she freed the Elfane Teig in the mountains southeast of Brewer's Bridge. He checked that report with full elves, and so have I, here. Also, she cleared out that nest of robbers, and was able to fight the Akrian priest alongside Sedfer's yeoman marshal. As far as weapons skills, she heads the list. Since she's been here, Chanis reports that she has worked hard on everything we've thrown at her. She's even shown skill in teaching. Sedfer reported that from Brewersbridge, and I've seen how the other students follow her here.
It's too soon, Marshal General, said Juris, and several other heads nodded. I grant she may be what you say, but what do we know of her as a guardsman? Nothing. She's not even a member of the Fellowship yet. How can you think of giving this honor to an outsider?
But she won't be an outsider after she takes her vows, said the Marshal General.
No, but... Juris squirmed in his seat. I know we need candidates, but we need the best candidates. We need to be sure they're strong guardsmen first, and then...
Watch them get spitted by better fighters? The Marshal General's voice sharpened. Right now, this outsider, as you call her, can outfight most of the marshals here unless they use their powers. I've seen her. Ambirion has seen her. Ask Sieri.
Why isn't he here? Asked Juris.
He will be. He had a problem. The Marshal General folded her hands on the table. Juris, I know it's not usual, but we haven't found anything wrong with her. Gerd knows we've tested, prodded, tried. Sieri had to set her up for days to make her lose her temper even once, and then she agreed she was wrong. Of course she's not perfect, no one is. Of course we wish she'd been Gerdish all along, come up through the Grange training. But allowing for that, she's the best candidate on the list, and if anything is amiss, it will come out in the stress of training or in the trials. It's not that we're choosing her over someone else. We haven't got anyone else.
Juris shook his head. Arianya, you're wrong, and I don't think I can convince you. Suppose she is a potential paladin that Gerd will approve and call, but right now what she is a good soldier and a novice guardsman. I don't care if she knows all the answers, can recite the 10 fingers backwards and forwards. She hasn't experienced a Grange. If she's so good, send her to me or to another Grange for a half year. Let's see how she does as a yeoman among yeomen. We've had unpleasant surprises before.
Gerd's gut! May the ale hold out! If I had a half-year Juris, I'd send her, but we don't have it!
The argument went on some time, but the shortage of paladins won over caution.
We must have the candidates, said the Marshal General finally. We must. She will be with the others here under our protection. Unless you can suggest a better Juris, I must insist.
All right.
He frowned, sucking his cheeks, but finally nodded.
All right, then. But be sure you do ward her, Marshal General. Don't rush that one through the training. She's not a knight yet, remember, and she's never had that sort of training.
Pox, called to the Marshal General's office, knew nothing of the argument. She expected to be told more details of the ceremony that would make her a guardsman. She found the Marshal General, the Knights Marshal of both orders, and a stranger, waiting for her.
Poxenarian, there are High Marshal Connet, High Marshal Suriest, and Sir Ambirion, a paladin of Gerd, presently attached to the training order. Please sit here.
Pox sat where she was told, her heart pounding. What now? Was she suspected of something so bad that it would take 2 High Marshals and a paladin to deal with it?
You have not changed your mind about joining the Fellowship? Asked the Marshal General.
No, Marshal General.
You are ready to accept Gerd as your patron, as you now accept the High Lord's dominion?
Yes, Marshal General.
Do you feel any particular, call, such as we have talked about in the past days?
Pox frowned.
Marshal General, I have felt something I could not define for some time. It began in Arrhenius, when I was still in Duke Phelan's company. I felt the need for a different kind of fighting, but I'm not good with words, Marshal General. I don't know how to say what I feel, but that here it seems right. I feel that it's right for me to join the Fellowship of Gerd. I feel that here I will find the right way to be the fighter I always wanted to be.
You told Marshal Sedfer in Brewersbridge that you didn't want to fight for gold alone. You wanted to fight against bad things. Is that still true?
Pox nodded.
Yes, Marshal General.
Poxenarian, I have talked to Marshal Chanis and Marshal Sieri about your progress, and with these High Marshals and Sir Ambirion about that and your past. They needed to hear what you have said from your own mouth.
She looked at the others.
Well?
One by one they nodded. Pox watched their faces confused.
What could she have said that was wrong?
The Marshal General tapped her fingers on her desk. Pox looked back at her.
Poxenarian, you must know, there's no way you couldn't know, that you are one of the best young fighters in the training company. Sedver was right to send you. You can qualify easily for either of the knightly orders, if that's what you want.
She paused, and Pox held her breath. The Marshal General resumed.
Or there is another possibility. Ordinarily, I would not make this offer to someone who is not yet a Girdsman. In fact, ordinarily, it comes only to those of proven service to Gird. But from the reports I've received, Gird has accepted as service several of your deeds in the past. The Training Council has agreed to it. So, would you accept an appointment as a Paladin candidate?
Pox felt her mouth open. She could not speak or move for an instant of incredulous joy. She saw amusement on their faces, felt her ears flaming again.
Me?
She finally squeaked, in a voice very unlike her own. She swallowed and tried again.
You mean me? A paladin candidate?
You, said the Marshal General, now smiling. Now, this is not an order. If you don't feel you can say yes, then refuse. We will not hold it against you. Indeed, there are those who think you need more experience.
But I'm so young.
Pox could feel the tears stinging her eyes. Her heart was moving again, bounding, and she felt she could float out of her chair.
You are young, yes. And you will be a novice yeoman, which is worse.
But if we didn't think you could be a paladin, Poxenarian, we would not suggest this. The Marshal General turned to Amberian.
Sir Amberian, you might just tell her what the training is like, while she considers this.
Pox turned to the paladin, a tall, dark-haired man, somewhat younger than the Marshal General by his looks. His open smile was infectious.
Poxenarian, paladin candidates receive training simultaneously as knights and as Gird's warriors. Each candidate is attached to one of the knightly orders, but spends much of his or her time with a paladin sponsor. The training is lengthy and intensive. The candidate must be tested in many ways, for any weakness could open a passage for evil. And even then the candidate may fail, for the final trials require proof that the gods have bestowed on the new paladin those powers which paladins must have. Of the few who begin this training, more than half never become paladins.
It means as well, said the Marshal General, giving up all thought of an independent life. Paladins are sworn to Gird's service. They own nothing but their own gear, and must go wherever Gird commands, on whatever quest Gird requires. For many, these restrictions are too onerous. Even we marshals have more freedom. So we do not expect that all to whom we offer candidacy will take it, or complete the training. And we respect those who withdraw no less than those who go on. Pox tried to control her excitement, but she could not think of anything but her oldest dreams. Paladin. It meant shining armor, and magic swords, and marvelous horses that appeared from nowhere on the day of the trials. It meant old songs of great battles, bright pictures in her mind like that of the paladin under the walls of Sibylle, all brightness and grace and courage. Another picture moved in her mind, herself on a shining horse riding up the lane from Three Firs to her father's farm, with children laughing and cheering alongside. Her mother smiled and wept, her brothers gaped, her father astonished, finally admitted he had been wrong and asked her pardon. She blinked at that unlikely vision and returned to hear the Marshal General saying something about opportunities to change her mind later. But her mind would never change, she vowed. When the Marshal General paused, she spoke.
I am honored, Marshal General. Please let me try.
The others looked at each other, then back to her.
You are sure, Poxenarian?
Yes, Marshal General, if you are. I can't believe it. She fought back a delighted laugh, and saw by their faces that they knew it.
Me, a sheep farmer's daughter, a paladin candidate.
Now they laughed, gently.
Poxenarian, said the Marshal General, we are pleased that you accept the challenge. Now let me explain why we are taking a chance on hurrying you.
Quickly she outlined the situation, the shortage of paladins, the growing assaults of evil power in several areas. You see, we must replenish the ranks as fast as we can,
or risk having no paladins to train new ones.
How long does the training take? Asked Pox.
It depends in part on the candidate's previous status. For you, it means becoming a knight first, and then a paladin. More than a year, likely 2 years. It means some isolation. Paladin candidates withdraw from the main training order, sometimes for months at a time, for meditation and individual instruction. Not all the candidates progress at the same rate. Do not be surprised if someone finishes before or after you who begins the same night.
We will be taking the vows of the new candidates the same night you become a guardsman, said the Marshal General.
This is unusual, as I said, but I feel that it is even more important for your vows to be public. Then, if anything happens... But Pox was determined that nothing would happen. Everything would go well. At that moment, she would have done anything they asked, for the sheer joy of having a chance to prove herself a worthy paladin candidate. She hardly felt the stairs under her feet as she went down. As she came through the arch to head for her quarters, she nearly ran into Argalt. She had spent a couple of evenings with him and his friends at a nearby tavern. He grinned at her.
Well, so you haven't been sent away, eh?
No. Pox felt like bouncing up and down. She wasn't sure if she should tell him. They had said nothing about keeping her selection secret.
It must be good news. How about sharing a picture later?
I can't. Pox couldn't contain it any longer. I have so much to do. You won't believe it, Argalt.
What? Did they select you for paladin candidate? Now you're joining the fellowship?
Pox felt her jaw drop. Did you know? He laughed.
No, but it's what I would do. Well now, sheep farmer's daughter, I'm glad for you. And you so stiff when you came, remember what I said?
Yes, yes I do. Pox threw back her head in glee. I have to go, I have things.
To do, yes I heard. I'll be watching you now. You'd better show us something.
Pox had never imagined Midwinter Feast in Finn Paneer. Back home, it had meant a huge roast of mutton, sweet cakes, and the elders telling tales around the fire. In the Duke's company, plenty of food and drink, speeches from the captains and the Duke, and a day of games and music. Here, the outer court erupted at first light, with all the juniors starting a snow battle. Pox took one look at the fortifications and decided that they must have stayed out half the night building them. When the training master came out to quell the riot, he was captured, rolled in the snow, and rescued only when Pox led the seniors in an assault on the largest snow fort. But by then he had agreed, as she found later was the custom, that the juniors had the right to demand toll of everyone, of any rank, crossing the court. Those who refused to pay were pelted with snowballs. Some were even caught and held for ransom. The day was clear, after several days of snow, and no one could possibly sneak across the yard undetected. The feasting started with breakfast. In place of porridge and cold meat, the cooks offered sweet cakes dipped in honey, gingerbread squares, hot sausages wrapped in dough and fried, and fried snow, a lacy-looking confection Pox had never seen. All day long the tables were heaped with food, replenished as it was eaten, and all day long the feasters came and went from one wild winter game to another. Pox had been told that she was free until mid-afternoon. With that, she joined a group that rode bareback out onto the snowy practice fields, where they jousted with blunt poles until only one remained mounted. Pox lost her pole early, but managed to stay on the black horse for most of the game, winning her bouts by clever dodges and a quick straight arm. She did not recognize the woman who finally shoved her off into a snowdrift. She floundered there, laughing so hard she could not work her way out for several minutes. After this, they tried to ride in a long line, all holding hands and guiding the horses with their legs. Soon they were all in the snow again, and after another few tricks, they came back for more food. Now the tables held roasts and breads as well as sweets. Pox piled her plate with roast pork and mutton, a half loaf of bread yellow with eggs. Four juniors staggered in, their faces bright red with cold. Behind them came the dwarves she had met, eyes gleaming. They saw her, waved, and came to sit across from her.
"Is it that you have recovered, Poxenarian, Dorthan's daughter of Three Furs?" asked Balkis.
"Yes, indeed," said Pox, "but the surgeons didn't want me fighting until after today."
"Ah, we have heard that you make adoption into the fellowship," said Balkis, stuffing a leg of chicken into his mouth. "This will make it that you are blood-bound to the others, is it not?"
Before Pox could answer, the woman who had dumped her in the snow slipped into a chair beside her and answered the dwarves.
No, it is not that, Rock Brothers. Ask not the child of the father's business.
To Pox's surprise, both dwarves blushed. She looked at the woman in surprise.
You're the one who...
Yes. The woman grinned as she took a sweet cake from a tray. I'm the one who dumped you. I'm Cammy, by the way. That's what everyone calls me. But my real name is Rahel, if you need it.
She said something in dwarvish to the dwarves. Balkis looked startled, but the darker dwarf burst into laughter. Pox eyed her. Cammy, or Rahel, was small and dark, a quick-moving woman who reminded Pox a little of Kana.
Why are you called Cammy if your name is Rahel? Asked Pox.
Oh, that. Well, it started when I came here. They used to tease me that I should have been Camwyn's paladin instead of Gerd's.
You're a paladin?
Pox had not thought of any paladin being so light-hearted. Cammy seemed almost frivolous.
Yes.
Cammy stuffed the rest of the cake into her mouth, and then spoke through it.
It was what I did when I was young and wild. I won't tell you. You don't need ideas like that. But they started calling me Camwynya, only that was too long, and then Cammy.
You're a candidate, right?
After tonight, said Pox.
I thought so. It's good that you know these Rock Brothers already.
I don't really, began Pox, but Cammy shushed her.
Better than many do, I can tell. Balkis Baltason, I will speak no more dwarvish, for this lady knows it not, but it is not the blood bond of brethren that she joins this night.
Not? How so? It is the fellowship of Gerd.
Yes, the fellowship is the blood bond of Gerd with each yeoman, Sir Dwarf, not each with the other.
But it is that brother of brother is brother, insisted the dwarf. It is that makes the clan bond the blood bond.
It is that for dwarves, said Cammy. For man it is other. The bond is like that of the axe master for each member of the clan, not between members.
It is not possible to have one without the other, said Balkis, his eyes flashing. If the axe master accepts adoption from any outlander, the outlander is blood-bound to the clan, all of it.
Cammy shot Pox a quick look. Pox, no one has ever convinced dwarves of this, and I won't, but I'll keep trying.
But now the second dwarf spoke for the first time.
Lady Cammy, you know me. Balkan son of Tekis, son of Cardus, mother son of Fedrin Harris' daughter, sister son he of the Golden Axe. But to this lady I have not spoken in my own name.
His voice was higher than Pox expected when speaking common, mid-range for a man, but much higher than Balkis's. Cammy nodded politely, and Pox copied her, wondering if she should state her own name again.
You say this lady is to be paladin as you are?
Yes, said Cammy, with another quick look to Pox.
Last time we saw Pox Anarion, Dorthan's daughter, she had hurt of an axe, and no healing of Marshall. That I thought was disgrace or punishment. To be candidate must be honor, is it not? Why this, then?
Now it was Pox's turn to blush. She did not know how much Cammy knew of the whole situation, but someone had to explain.
Sir Dwarf, she began, copying Cammy's style of address. I said then it was not unfairness of the Marshal.
But we thought it so. It might be you did not know, being Nedros.
At that word, Cammy choked on her food and shook a finger at the dwarves. Pox, confused, waited for a moment, then went on.
It was not unfairness. I told you they thought I had taken value from them in training and had not returned value.
Now they nodded, and she hurried on.
So they said if I wished to stay, I must make a commitment. I was willing to make it, even if they did not let me stay for the truth I felt of it.
Truth?
Balkan looked at her sharply.
It is that you have that power to see truth itself?
She might, interrupted Cammy, and not even know it. Nedros, indeed.
What is that? Asked Pox.
I hope, said Cammy severely, that they're using it in the gnome sense, unwilling or unable to see insult, and not in the dwarf sense of cowardly.
Both dwarves burst into speech, protesting.
It is not that we...
That is not what we...
Balkan shushed his friend and continued.
Lady Cammy, Lady Poxenarian, we did not think that this lady who would use an axe, would be cowardly. No... Only that it is not always the same for man and dwarf when words be said, that some should be taken and others not. If it is that we make mistakes and think someone unfair to this fine lady, who would use an axe, Sir Tig's first tool, then we ask pardon of the lady, but we are glad to see that she has honor now in this house and is bloodbound to a clan we honor.
Pox was thoroughly confused. Cammy turned to her with an exaggerated sigh. I'd advise you to accept their good wishes and apologies, and be glad you have found dwarven friends. They truly did not mean to say you were cowardly. Pox smiled at them. Sirs, I know not your words, but I thank you for your good wishes. They both grinned back.
That is very good, said Balkan, and if you wish to learn, we still will teach you what we know of axes.
Pox nodded. If I am permitted, in my training, I will ask it of you.
Pox!
Aris Marakai had come up behind her, with several of his friends. He shuffled from one foot to another when she turned.
I brought you something.
Aris, you shouldn't have. Pox took from his hand a carefully worked leather pouch, fringed and decorated with tiny shells. It must have cost... He shrugged. Not that much. And anyway, Rufin told me that paladins never have any money and can't buy things, and so I thought maybe you'd keep it and remember us.
I'd remember you anyway, Aris, said Pox. But thank you. I will treasure this.
She knew already what would go in it. Sabin's little red stone horse, and Kana's medallion. Aris darted away. Pox met Cammy's eyes.
It isn't quite that bad, said Cammy. We don't get rich, but we can buy a fruit pie occasionally.
That's good, said Pox. I like mushrooms myself.
Then pray you aren't assigned to the granges west of here for your grange duty, said Cammy, laughing.
Dry and high, not a mushroom for days and days.
When do we have grange duty? Asked Pox.
Just before the trials, said Cammy. You may find it strange. You've never been in a normal grange, have you?
Nope. Then it's even more important for you. We all must know what limits marshals face, and granges, and not think because we are gifted with powers that it's so easy for others.
Cammy.
The hall was filling now, as more and more cold revelers came in for warmth and food. Pox was startled to see the training master grab Cammy by both shoulders and hug her.
Gerd's right arm. I thought you were still in a kale.
Through midwinter feast?
Master Chanis, even the High Lord wouldn't keep me in a kale through the best day in the year. I suppose not. Are you out, or just on leave?
Out. Gerd's grace for it, too. If I'd missed midwinter's feast and the installation, I'd have burst something.
And are you fit to sing, Cammy?
Asked Sir Ambirion, who had followed the training master into the hall. Cammy looked at Pox.
Ask Poxenarian. I only dumped her a couple of times this morning.
Pox could not help grinning. Only once.
Ah, but who stuck her foot in your black's ribs in the line to make him crow-hop, and you flew off then, too?
Was that you?
Pox joined the roar of laughter.
It was, said Cammy, and I could do it again. Fit to sing? By the dragon's tongue I could sing and blow the low pipe at the same time.
Again laughter, and Pox saw someone scurry away, yelling that a low pipe was coming up. But as she watched Cammy move a tray out of her way and settle onto the table, the training master touched her shoulder and beckoned. Pox followed him away from the hall. The rest of the day, she spent in preparation for the night's ceremonies. She had to change into the plain gray of the training company, but the steward handed her, as well, the white surcoat of a paladin candidate. She would have to change hurriedly between ceremonies. Pox had lines to learn, and, like the Finthan youngsters who were making their final vows that night, she spent some time in the High Lord's Hall in meditation. When spectators began arriving, the group was led away to a small bare room off one end. Pox felt her stomach tightening. Her mouth was dry. The others in this room were not the paladin candidates, but junior yeomen, making their vows as senior yeomen. The honor of taking these vows at Midwinter Feast in the High Hall came to those whose grange marshals had recommended them. Most were about the age Pox had been when she left home, 18 or 19 winters. They eyed her as nervously as she watched them. The summons came with an ear-shattering blast of trumpets, as High Marshals Connaught and Suriest opened the door and called them out. The High Lord's Hall was brilliantly lit by hundreds of candles. The spectators sat and stood on either side of the wide central aisle. With the others, Pox stood just below the platform. The trumpet music ended, followed by an interlude of harps. Then another trumpet fanfare introduced the Marshal General, resplendent in a white surcoat over her armor, with Gerd's crescent embroidered in silver on the breast. Following her were the other High Marshals presently at Finn Paneer, all in Gerd's blue and white.
Behind them came those visitors who would be honored during the ceremonies. Two marshals of Falk, in long robes of ruby red, with gold-decorated helms set in the crooks of their arms. A swordmaster of Tyr, in black and silver. Pox remembered the device on his arms from Arrhenius. Last of all came the seven paladins resident and whole of limb in Finn Paneer, each in full armor, carrying Gerd's pennant. Pox watched them come up the aisle, her heart pounding with excitement and joy. This was exactly what she had thought about in Three Furs, the music, the brilliant colors. She tried to take a long breath and calm down. She recognized Sir Ambirion and Lady Cammy, but none of the other paladins. They mounted the platform behind her, and she heard the footsteps move away to its far side. Then the trumpets were still, and the Marshal General's clear voice called out the ancient greeting. In darkness, in cold, in the midst of winter, where nothing walks the world but death and fear, let the brave rejoice. I call the light. I call the light, came the response from every voice. It seemed to shake the air. Out of darkness, light. Out of silence, song. Out of the sun's death, the birth of each year. Pox half listened, knowing the words better than any other she'd heard from the Marshal General. Just so had her grandfather said them when she was small, and just so her father had said them the last midwinter feast she was at home. Out of cold, fire. Out of death, life. Out of fear, courage to see the day. With the others, she gave the response, and together they all completed the ritual, raising first one hand, then the other, and finally both, to defy sun death and greet the sun. In darker night, brighter stars. In greater fear, greater courage. In the midst of winter, the world's birth. Praise to the High Lord. This would be repeated between every segment of the ceremonies until sunrise the next dawn. Pox remembered falling asleep, year after year, and the first year that she had managed to stay awake, the last year of her grandfather's life, to light the first morning fire with new wood. For with sundown, all fires were destroyed, to show respect, her grandfather had said, and to prove their courage to endure. Here, too, the fires went out when the sun fell, to be kindled at daybreak. Only those desperately ill were allowed a fire on midwinter night. Yeomen of Gerd, said the High Marshal then, and Pox pulled her mind back to the ceremony. We have with us those who seek to join the Fellowship of Gerd. By our ancient customs, we will test them in their steadfastness, and you will witness their vows. By Gerd's grace, came the response. Pox felt her neck prickle. She was suddenly cold and wanted to rub her arms. Stand forth, you who would swear fealty to the Fellowship of Gerd, said the Marshal General. With those on her side of the aisle, Pox faced toward the center of the hall. One at a time, they would mount those steps and face a marshal for the ritual exchange of blows. Pox suspected that in her case, it might be something more than a ritual. Her leg itched. She resisted the urge to rub it on her other leg. Before she had time to worry, she heard her name. All at once she felt eager and went up the steps quickly. To the question she made response firmly. She acknowledged Gerd as the High Lord's servant, the patron of fighters, the protector of the helpless. She swore to keep the code of Gerd and obey all marshals and lawful authority over you. And then the questioner stepped back, and she faced the Marshal General, who held out two identical staves. Pox took one, with an internal prayer that she wouldn't look too foolish. The Marshal General smiled, feinted, and aimed a smashing blow at her. Pox rolled aside, countering as best she could. The power of the Marshal General's blows carried all the way up her arms. Ritual exchange of blows indeed, thought Pox. The staves rattled. She took a blow on the thigh and managed to touch the Marshal General's arm with a leftover move that carried little sting. Then her staff seemed to twitch in her hands and go flying through the air. The Marshal General's staff tapped her head firmly before she could dodge, and the Marshal General stepped back, bowed, and greeted her. Welcome, Yeoman of Gerd, to Gerd's Grange. As she spoke, she placed a Gerd's medallion over Pox's head. Pox bowed as she had been instructed. I am honored, Marshal General, to be accepted in Gerd's fellowship. Then, dismissed, she left the platform
and moved to a space behind it, where the training master waited to help her on with a candidate's surcoat and her new Gerd's medallion. The paladin candidates were presented just before dawn, after ceremonies honoring marshals and paladins killed in the past year. It seemed to Pox a very plain affair. The candidates were simply named and shown to the spectators, and assigned to one of the knightly orders and a sponsoring paladin. After the events of the day before, Pox had hoped to get Cammy as her sponsor, but instead, Ambirion led her before the crowd. Cammy was sponsoring a yeoman marshal from somewhere in the Westmounts, she heard later. Pox knew none of the candidates well, and only four of them at all. The others had been sent from distant granges after earlier selection. She had one more day of freedom, for the second day of Midwinter Feast was as lively as the first, and fell into bed that night completely exhausted, and as happy as she could ever remember being. Chapter 23 Pox's first experience as a paladin candidate was a familiar one, moving into new quarters. These were south of the main complex, in an annex to the paladin's hall. She was surprised to find that she would still have a room to herself, but Ambirion explained. You will spend time in solitary exercises. You will need the privacy. Later, you will learn the skills of meditation even when surrounded by noise and upheaval, but for novices, it's easier to learn in solitude. Pox nodded silently. She was still shy of her paladin sponsor. It was hard to believe that he and Cammy were in the same order. He seemed more somber, far less approachable. She unpacked her things quickly, wondering a little at the requirement that her sponsor must see everything she owned. But for that, too, he had a reason. Paladins must be willing to go anywhere, any time, able to endure hardship, not just discipline. Those who clung to treasured possessions, favorite foods, even friends, might make fine marshals or knights, but not paladins. So in the early days of training, they must do without accustomed possessions. Those who withdrew would have theirs restored, but those continuing had to face the possible loss of items deemed too luxurious. Pox understood the reasoning, but could not imagine anyone preferring fancy clothes or jewelry to being a paladin. She said so, and Ambirion grinned at her. I've seen it myself, and there is always something hard to give up, if not material things, habits, and ways of thought. This may be a trivial test for you, but there are others. No one passes through this training without struggle. He looked over her gear as he spoke, and told her to keep Sabin's red horse and Kana's medallion. Aris's gift, her weapons, the shining mail the Elfane Tag had given her, all these went into storage. Then he said, What about money? Do you have any gold or silver? Pox handed over the heavy leather sack she'd brought from Brewer's Bridge. This, and some on account with the Guild and Saya. His eyebrows went up. Did Marshal Sedfer know how much gold you had? I don't know. Pox thought back to Brewer's Bridge, already distant to her mind. I told him the Elfane Tag had gifted me. He saw the jewel I gave the Grange, and knew I had money for food, lodging, and clothes. Ambirion frowned, and Pox wondered what she'd done wrong. Did you know that most orders of knights charge a fee for their training, which is waived for poor applicants? He asked. Pox shook her head. She had assumed that the training company was maintained by the Fellowship of Gerd, through contributions from the Granges. Perhaps Sedfer expected you'd become a Gerdsman, as you have, and didn't bother to mention it. Ambirion went on. As a paladin, you may not hold wealth. We are bound to keep this for you, and restore it if you fail. But if you are called as a paladin, well... You mean I owe the training college? Asked Pox. Not precisely owe. Sedfer sponsored you here at first, and you accepted this chance freely as a gift. It would be ill grace on our part to ask alms of you now. On the other hand, while we would ask nothing of a farmer's daughter who had nothing, we would ordinarily ask a fee of someone who could pay, and that gold, that fee, would not be returned, whatever happened. He shifted the bag from hand to hand. What had you planned with this? Well, Pox had trouble remembering the clutter of plans and dreams with which she'd ridden from Brewer's Bridge. I had sent money to my family, to repay my dowry, but I'd planned to send more if I became a knight, for then I could always earn my own way. And I thought of a new saddle for Socks, my black horse. He nodded slowly. You thought of warriors' needs ahead, and your family. Are they poor, Poxenarian?
Not really poor, like some I've seen. We had food enough, if not too much. We always had clothes and fire in winter. But there's no money, most times. It took me years to save up the copper bits I left home with, and all the other children to be raised and wed.
Pox shook her head suddenly.
But now I'm here, and if I'm a paladin, I won't need a saddle, will I? Someone else will take socks, and I won't be looking for work. Tell me what the fee is, sir, and I can send the rest to them and be done with it.
Amberian smiled at her with real warmth.
You choose well. Would you agree to give this bag full to the fellowship and send whatever is on account to your family?
There's more on account, said Pox.
No matter. We are not here to fatten ourselves at the expense of farmers. Now, what's this?
He pushed at the little bundle of scuffed and tattered old scrolls left in her saddlebags.
I thought you weren't a scholar.
I don't know, said Pox. I found them in my things after the Elfane Tag. I was going to ask Ambrose about them, but that's when the caravan was attacked, and after that I forgot. I couldn't read them then. Maybe now.
She started to unroll one of them. The parchment crackled.
Here, wait. Amberian took it from her. These are old, Poxenarian. We must be careful with them, or they'll go to pieces.
He peered at the faded script.
Gerd's arm, I can't...
What do you think that is?
He pushed it back to Pox, who leaned close.
I'm not sure, for on this day, something, Gerd came to this village where was the...
Is that word knight?
I think so, said Amberian. I think it's knight of the prince's cohort, and there they...
Something where that's rubbed out, and then... And as he said to me, that he did, and called the High Lord's blessing on it...
Amberian looked up at her for a moment.
Where did you say you found these?
I didn't find them exactly, said Pox. After the fight underground, the Elfane Tag got me back to the surface, somehow, and then had me pack up a whole load of things. I was too sick to notice much, but the Elfane Tag insisted. A day or so later, when I looked through the packs, the scrolls were there. I tried to read them, but...
Pox flushed.
I didn't read that well, and the script is odd.
Yes, it is.
Amberian seemed abstracted.
Pox, this has nothing to do with your training, but I believe these scrolls may be valuable. They're old, very old, and I've read something like this in the archives. Would you let the archivist see them?
Of course, said Pox. I'd be glad to know what they are and why the Elfane Tag gave them. I almost threw them away, but...
I'm glad you didn't, said Amberian. If they're really an old copy of Luop's writings...
Luop? Is that Gerd's friend?
Yes. Most of what we know about Gerd comes from the Chronicles of Luop. This...
He nodded toward the scroll he held.
Seems to be part of that. It's talking, I think, about the battle at Sea Meadow.
He put the scroll down and looked around the room.
That's all, then?
Good. Now about your horse. What do you call him?
Pox felt herself blushing again.
Socks, she mumbled.
She had had enough comments to know that it should have been something grander, but Amberian did not laugh.
Better, to my mind, than some long name you can't shout at need. You know that if you pass the trials, you'll have a mount.
She nodded. She had heard more than once of the paladin's mounts that appeared after their trials, waiting fully equipped in the courtyard outside the High Lord's Hall. No one knew whence they came. No one saw them come.
But in the meantime, you can use socks for training. Doggle says he's good enough. In fact, the training order would take him when you pass the trials, unless you want to sell him elsewhere.
Yes, sir. Take the things you won't need back to the steward, and then come back here. You'll meet the other paladins and candidates.
For some days after that, Pox heard nothing more about the scrolls. Her schedule kept her too busy to ask. It was unlike any training she'd had before. Instead of weapons drill or military theory, she found herself immersed in history and geography. Which men had come to which area, and when and why. She learned of their laws and their beliefs. She had to memorize article after article of the Code of Gerd. Gradually, she built in her mind a picture of the whole land about, and the beliefs of the people. She could see, as in a drawing, her father's family perched on the side of a moor north of most trade routes. They had believed in the High Lord and the Lady of Peace, but also in the horse nomad deity Guthlock and the Windsteed. Their boundary stones, and the rituals for keeping them, came from Arrhenus. The well sprite for whom she had plucked flowers every spring was called the same, Peary, from Brewer's Bridge to Three Firs, and south to Valdaire. But in Arrhenus proper, the well spirits were multiple, and called Cowlin. They had no personal names. She learned that elves claimed no lands. The elven home kingdoms cannot be reached by unguided humans anyway. In Leonia, where elves and humans ruled together a mortal kingdom, human land rights were held provisionally, and any change of use had to be approved by the crown. Dwarves claimed Duskgift, a stone mass, but cared little who traveled the surface. Gnomes held all property by intricate law, and to step 1 foot length on gnomish land without legal right could bring the whole kingdom down on the criminal. Even in human lands, the laws of property differed. In Saya, where land was granted by the crown in return for military service, those who actually farmed rarely owned the land they worked. But in Fintha, nearly all farms were owned by the farmer. High Marshal Garrus taught them the lore of the gods, all that was known of the great powers of good and evil. Pox learned that Akria, the web mistress, had not been known in Ayr. Proof, according to Marshal Garrus, that Akria was a minor god, for the great gods had power everywhere in the known world. Liart, on the other hand, had been known in Old Ayr, but not to the northern nomads or the sea folk until they met the men from Arrhenus. She learned that her fear of the Quakgani came from mistaking them for Quaknom, a race related to elves but devoted to evil. The Quakgani, Garrus insisted, were never wholly evil and often good. Of the greatest evils, Marshal Garrus taught only their names and general attacks. Nada, the unnamer, who threatened forgetfulness, and Gitris, the unmaker. "They are one in destruction," he said firmly. "They try to enforce despair and convince you that nothing matters, for they will wipe out all. Never believe it. The elves call them A. Inissi, the unsinger who unravels the song of the singer, but they know as well as we that the singer lives, and living must create." "But are they really one or two?" asked Harbin, the yeoman marshal sponsored by Cammy. High Marshal Garrus shrugged. "No man knows, Harbin. No man needs to know. I think, but it is only my thought, that it is only one, but one who appears in the guise you most fear. One fears the loss of fame, of being unknown and forgotten, and another fears having all his works unmade. All mortals have some form of this fear, and in search of immortality among men may do great evil without intention. It is hard to trust that the High Lord's court will remember and reward a good life, hard to risk fame or life work when those are at stake." Along with this, all the candidates were encouraged to learn languages. Pox had already found in her travels that she was quick to pick up new phrases. Since she had made friends among the elves and dwarves in Finpinir, Amberian urged her to spend her evenings with them, speaking elven and dwarvish in turn. At first, this went quickly. She could ask for food and drink, and greet her friends politely, after only a few lessons. But the more she wanted to say, the harder it got. A simple question like, "Where are you from?" would bring on a flurry of discussion. Pox found the dwarves more willing to explain than the elves, but she could not follow their explanations. "It is simple," said Balkan one night, the third time of trying to explain dwarf clan rankings. "Let us begin with the Golden Axe." They had begun with the Golden Axe before, but Pox nodded. "The Golden Axe has 2 sons and a daughter."
"Yes, but—"
Pox knew that something difficult was coming.
"Wait. The Golden Axe that was, before this, had a sister who had a son, and so this Golden Axe is the sister son of the Golden Axe that was."
"His nephew?" ventured Pox. Balkan scowled.
"No, not. In common, that is son of either brother or sister, yes? And this is only for sister son. Brother son is mother's clan."
Pox started to ask why, and thought better of it.
"Now, this Golden Axe has no sister, only brother, and brother has no sons, but a daughter. It is clear?"
Pox nodded. She still had a thread to follow. The current Golden Axe had a brother with a daughter, and 2 sons and a daughter of his own.
so will inherit to the title either the son of his brother's daughter, or his oldest son, or the son of his daughter.
But why not just his son? Asked Pax.
Because that is not his blood, said Balkan. His son's son is not his clan, you see that, only his daughter's son.
Then why not his daughter? Asked Pax again.
What? She be the golden axe? No. That would rive the rock indeed. No dwarf maid wields cold metal.
They don't fight?
I did not say that. They wield not the cold metal, the weapon steel, once it is forged. You, lady, would not stand long against a dwarven warrior maid in her own hall.
Pax went back to asking the names of common objects after that. With elves, the trouble was different but equally impenetrable. Some questions were simply ignored, others answered in a spate of elven that drowned her mind in lovely sound. Ardhil gladly taught her songs and encouraged her to learn the elaborate elven courtesies, but as for learning more about elves themselves, it was,
Lady, the trees learn water by drinking rain, and stars learn night by shining.
Pax found individual words easy to speak and remember, but her best efforts at stringing them together sounded nothing like Ardhil's speech, though he praised her. She had also much to learn of paladins, as did the other candidates. Most of them had thought, like Pax, that being Gerd's holy warrior meant gaining vast arcane powers. They would be nearly invincible against any foe. Their paladin sponsors quickly set them straight. Although paladins must be skilled at fighting, that, their sponsors insisted, was the least of their abilities. A quest might involve no fighting at all, or a battle against beings no steel could pierce.
Paladins show that courage is possible, Cammy said to them one day. It is easy enough to find reasons to give in to evil. War is ugly, as Pax knows well.
She nodded toward Pax, who suddenly remembered the worst of Arrhenius, the dead baby in Rotengra, the murdered farm folk, Feralt dying, Alured's tortures.
We do not argue that war is better than peace. We are not so stupid as that. But it is not peace when cruelty reigns, when stronger men steal from farmers and craft workers, when the child can be enslaved or the old thrown out to starve and no one lifts a hand. That is not peace. That is conquest and evil. We start no quarrels in peaceful lands. We never display our weapons skills to earn applause, but we are Gerd's cudgel, defending the helpless, and teaching by our example that one person can dare greater force to break evil's grasp on the innocent. Sometimes we can do that without fighting, without killing, and that's best.
But we're warriors first, said Pax, before she thought. She wished she'd kept still. She had already noticed that the others, with their years in the fellowship and service in the Granges, had different views. Now they all looked at her, and she fixed her gaze on Cammy.
Yes, said Cammy slowly. Some evils need that direct attack, and we must be able to do it, and to lead others in battle. Did you ever wonder why paladins are so likable?
It seemed an odd remark, and threw Pax off balance. Apparently others were confused as well, by the stirring in the room.
It's important, said Cammy, now with that grin that pulled them all together. We come to a town, perhaps, where nothing has gone right for 12 years. Perhaps there's a Grange of Gerd. Perhaps not, but the people are frightened, and they've lost trust in each other, in themselves. We may lead them into danger. Some will be killed or wounded. Why should they trust us?
No one answered, and she went on.
Because we are likable, and other people will follow us willingly, and that's why we are more likely to choose a popular yeoman marshal as a candidate than the best fighter in the Grange.
Pax dared a sideways glance. From the thoughtful and even puzzled faces around her, the others had never considered this. She herself, remembering the paladin in Arrhenius, realized that she had trusted him at once, without reservation, although the marshal with him had annoyed her.
But you see how dangerous that could be if someone wanted to do evil, said Cammy, breaking into her thoughts.
We choose from those with a gift for leadership. Those people will follow happily. Therefore, we must be sure that you will never use that gift wrongly. Another thing, because we come and go, we make demands on those we help for only a short time. It's easier for them to follow us quickly and then go home. Never scorn marshals. When we have left, they must maintain their yeoman's faith. Perhaps we showed them what was possible, but we left them with years of work. As for the powers legend that grafted onto paladins, in reality, there were 4.
"We all have powers, but not all of us have them equally," said Amberian one day. "Any paladin can call light." A glow lit the end of his finger. "It is not fire, which gives light by burning, but true light, the essence of seeing. There are greater lights." At his nod, Cammy suddenly seemed to catch fire, wreathed in a white radiance too bright to watch. Then it was gone. All the candidates blinked. "More than that," Amberian went on, "some paladins, but not all, can call light that will spread across a whole battlefield." Pox remembered the light in Sibylle. "It is the duty and power of a paladin," said Amberian, "to show the truth of good and evil, to make clear, and that is what our light is for. It is a tool. Sometimes we use it to prove our call, but it must never be used for the paladin's own convenience or pride."
"But how do you make the light?" asked Plevis, one of the other candidates.
"We do not make it. We call it, ask it, in Gerd's name. Later in your training, we will graft this power onto you for a while, so that you can learn to use it. But it will not be your power until you are invested as a paladin, in the trials. And the gods give or withhold your gifts."
"You mean we won't know until then?" asked Harbin.
"You knew that, surely."
"Well, yes, but..." He shook his head. "It seems a long time wasted if we don't become paladins. Can't you tell earlier?"
"We can tell if you are doing badly," said Amberian. "But we have no power over the gods' decisions, Harbin. We prepare the best candidates we can find as well as we can, and then present them. Then they choose. Why, we do not know. That's one reason the failing candidates are honored. It does not mean they are not worthy. They are the best we could find. Even those who withdraw from training are honored for having been chosen to attempt it. Any one of you..." He looked around the small group. "Any one of you would make a fine knight in any order. Most of you would make a fine marshal. One or two, perhaps, are too independent of mind. But you would all do. But to be a paladin requires more than weapon skills, a gift for leadership, the willingness to risk all for good, the deep love of good and hatred of evil."